Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I brought on Jake Burns from Cleveland.com, and he wrote a really interesting article about Freddie Kitchens and Todd Monken and their offensive backgrounds and how he expects those concepts of the air raid and the Air Coryell offense to influence Baker Mayfield's development and the Browns' on-field product in 2019. You guys know, if you are a regular listener to the show, I love Todd Monken. I love the air raid. Hal Mummy, Mike Leach, those are my guys. That's what really gets me going in terms of football. So I thought it was a pretty appropriate guy to have on the podcast, and Jake spoke very well and I think had a lot of really great insight into the Cleveland offense and into kind of just the direction that football is going in general right now. So I hope that you guys like it. And of course, we did jump on over to the Patreon and did a short little podcast, more Brown specific, about, you know, how their roster needs to improve for Baker Mayfield to compete in the playoffs and for Kitchens and Monken to be a success. As always, if you can support the show, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. Super helpful. It definitely does make a difference. And if you really like the show, you can support the podcast on Patreon. You can head over to www.patreon.com/takecast and go ahead and sign up for $5 a month to get bonus podcasts, showdown episodes, all sorts of good stuff, as well as access to our Discord. And reminder, the show is brought to you by dailyroto.com. With golf season starting up, we are doing Going for the Green, our weekly daily fantasy golf podcast, and we have the tools at dailyroto.com provided by Data Golf. You can use the promo code Rory, R-O-R-Y, to save 10% on those tools, where you have customizable projections with long-term form, short-term form, course history involved, as well as outright betting tools that will tell you if a bet you are making is plus EV or minus EV, and our head-to-head matchup betting tool as well. All of these I found to be pretty useful for myself, and now let's go ahead and get into the show. All right, everyone, would like to welcome Jake Burns to the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Jake_Burns18. You're probably familiar with his name from his Todd Monken and Freddie Kitchens piece that was widely passed around the football Twitter sphere about a week ago, I guess, at the time this comes out. And yeah, as someone who's super interested in Baker Mayfield, Todd Monken, Freddie Kitchens, I really wanted to have Jake on the show after reading the piece. So, Jake, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really my pleasure. I appreciate the reference to the article and the works and all that stuff, buddy.
So pretty much every time I have someone on the show, I just want to talk about, you know, why football? How did you get into football specifically, sports mm-hmm. journalism, and with you, of course. Why the Cleveland Browns? How did you fight through it all those years?
Yeah, so I grew up in Central Ohio, which is sort of, as you know, folks who are out of state or anything like that, Columbus is the center. You can either choose your allegiances north of I-71 or south of on I-71 to Cincinnati. And I just grew up with my dad in our mid-90s. You know, was a Bernie Kosar fan and all the above. And that was really my first exposure. So that was when I became a Browns fan. I haven't known anything else, unfortunately. I mean, I don't know, I guess I'm just loyal. I there were plenty of opportunities, obviously, when they left when I was a youngster to get hooked on something. And I enjoyed Brett Favre for a little while. But then, you know, the Browns came back and I was fell in love again, just like you would expect any kid to do who grew up. That was their first exposure. So, yeah, I was hooked on the Browns from a young age. I don't know. I don't know why. I you know, my upbringing, I'm 29 right now. I'm almost 30. I sat through some terrible football, you know, and even up to this year was some pretty terrible football. So, yeah, but I grew up playing the game. I grew up playing three sports, the typical, you know, baseball, basketball, football. I played football at a small college called Muskingum, which is over by east of Zanesville, east of Columbus, and played there for 4 years and fell in love playing quarterback there, started 3 years, and then moved on to coaching. I did some quality control stuff there at Muskingum. And then coached high school football for a while and then got out of coaching and didn't really know what I wanted to do, sort of a career change.
Sure.
And I had gone down the insurance route. And then when I was doing that, I was kind of really wondering how to keep, you know, scratching the football itch. So I took a shot in the dark, tried to write for a couple different places. Waiting for Next Year, which is an independent blog up in Cleveland, gave me a really good opportunity to write for them. And from there, it kind of took off. I noticed nobody was doing video study in the Cleveland Browns market. Nobody was doing game breakdowns, which is what I decided to do before the 2017 season. And from there, it took off. I gained like 3,000 followers throughout the year and people seemed to enjoy what I was doing. So then I launched in between 2017 and 2018. I did some draft prospect study stuff, but then really wanted to just commit myself to the Browns. So I took on the idea of doing that Browns Film Breakdown channel, which I have as a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And then I have the Browns Film Breakdown Twitter handle, which has done really well. People are very interested in the market. And, you know, Cleveland is a football city above all else, even with the Indians and Cavs who have traditionally outperformed them, obviously, over the last 20 years or so. But, yeah, it's gone well. The OBR, Orange and Brown Report, brought me on to do film study for them. And Cleveland.com contracted me to do a lot of work for them, too. So, yeah, I'm very blessed. It's been a great situation for me, but I grew up around football. I studied football. I was a quarterback. So it always, the X and O side of things was always fascinating to me. And yeah, relaying that information to people as best I can. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. We don't know, you know, we're not in the huddle. We don't know what everybody's responsible for, but we can at least teach some things to people and it's gone well. I'm really happy with how it's worked out in a short, relatively short time.
So before we get into the article and Todd Monken, I did want to talk to you a little bit about the YouTube channel, like kind of, you know, the amount of hours you're putting into it every week, how easy or difficult it has been to monetize and just kind of some of the behind the scenes stuff with running a YouTube channel.
Yeah. So I launched that with the idea of, I just wanted to do it for fun. Like it's just, I break down individual clips on Twitter and I do as much article work as I can, but sometimes getting on a video for 15 minutes is really informative. You can really explain what you're talking about. And it's been pretty good. I can't say I've devoted a lot of time to it. Really, it's my early weeks are busy pulling as much film as I can. And then as the All 22 comes out Monday night, getting all that. Then by the end of the week, I usually will have that show, a couple shows a week. I try to in season do offense and defense. And then once I got done with offense, defense, once I got the cut-ups done, I would talk to somebody. I'd have a guest on. They would come on. We'd record for 15, 20 minutes. Probably still a bit too long. The attention span of folks is like 7 or 8 minutes. So we're going to try to perfect that next year. We noticed the average video length. But, yeah, I think we just crossed 1,300 subscribers and like 40,000 hours watched. So we can monetize it now, which is what we're going to try to do. So nothing really gained too much from that other than just a really cool platform that people have turned to. And we've done a nice job sort of selling, at least the Browns Film Breakdown channel. I want to launch a website at some point. I'm so swamped.
It's a tough gig running a website. Yeah,
it is. So we're going to try to maybe do something along those lines, but yeah, the YouTube channel has real potential. We just got to kind of figure out where the sweet spot is with sort of fitting it for everybody's, you know, need, but also getting enough stuff explained, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the meat of this article that I will put in the show description if you guys did miss it is really about the offensive backgrounds of Freddie Kitchens and Todd Monken, and you know, a lot about the air raid, which is definitely, it's like my favorite thing about pro football right now. The first question is, how many of the air raid concepts was Kitchen installing into the offense this last year? You know, were they installing mesh plays? Was there a lot of option routes for Landry and Higgins and Callaway? Kind of what things were already installed in the offense that we've already seen?
Yeah, so to sort of backtrack it, the Air Corps Yell, which is sort of the, I call it the cousin of the air raid, it's developed on some similar principles, which is what Todd Haley and Bruce Arians, that's the tree there. And Freddie is a part of that tree in the Corps Yell system, which became very popular with Dan Fouts and the Chargers in the early 80s, and then tracked into, you know, the greatest show on turf with the Rams in the early 2000s. But as the year started, they were doing quite a few vertical concepts, which gave them trouble, but they were doing some area, like, you know, all of this stuff sort of meshes together. You're stealing
it more,
but they were doing like the old Philly mesh, which is, you know, you're running number one and both of your number ones are typically on that mesh route over the middle. And then they're using somebody to settle over the ball at about 12. They call that the old Chip Kelly mesh. They were doing that Chip Kelly mesh a lot. But not a ton. They did some drive route stuff. I thought as Freddie took over independently week 9, I started to feel more air raid principle things, more quick throws, more option routes, more digs, some of those things that are principles of an air raid, a little bit more rub route stuff. I think that they started to do a little bit more with the idea that we need to get the ball out of Baker's hands quickly, getting the ball to wide receivers on screen game stuff that Hal Mumme obviously made really famous at Kentucky. Some of those staples I think we saw more of the second half of the year. And obviously as Todd Monken arrives from Tampa Bay, the beautiful part of that is that Monken had already meshed a Coryell system when he got with Dirk Cutter. So they have the idea of it down, and it's really great for Cleveland because they're bringing in a guy whose playbook is already meshed with somebody who comes from a Coryell background, which is awesome because they can kind of build principles and build ideas off of each other. And discourse with a lot of Cleveland fans, you know, people who write about them and cover them, is even if Monken's there for a year, he's going to be a head coaching candidate without a doubt, because I think the Browns will have a pretty successful offense. I would be pretty stunned if they didn't have at least a relatively top half of the league offense. He obviously gathered some buzz as a head coach this offseason. So even if it's just for 1 year, it's really exciting for Freddie and Ryan Lindley, the quarterback coach, and Adam Henry, the wide receiver coach, to get exposure to what it is that he does, what his principles are in a passing game. Because if you I thought Pro Football Focus did a really fascinating study just a few days ago where they said there's only two quarterbacks in the league who threw the ball past the sticks over 50% of the time, and those were you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston. So they're going to drive the ball downfield. It's going to be I hesitate to say it's perfect, but in anything in football, but if you're looking for an aggressive quarterback, you're looking for the smart, you know, a guy that's able to work through some progressions, but also ripping into tight windows and drive the football downfield with a big arm. I mean, I'm not sure Mayfield could fit any more perfectly along the lines of what these two would like to work with a quarterback.
Well, it's very similar to what he was doing at Oklahoma, throwing to open spots, you know, a lot of play action, which I guess makes sense because Lincoln Riley, through a pretty convoluted way, you can trace him back to Hal Mumme and those guys. Mm-hmm. I think it was – so he was with Ruffin McNeil, who was on that Kentucky staff. Yep. So a lot of those concepts, I mean, and Lincoln Riley's pretty much considered the best play caller at the college level. And I mean, getting Baker to do what he did in college is like, that's what you should want to do with him.
Oh, absolutely. If you can get him making anticipation throws, you know, into tight windows, like we said earlier, but also just anticipation throws of seeing somebody open, but he's really good. Like, you know, we mentioned with tying back to Kentucky in those days of screen game, he's very accurate ball placement wise to get the ball where you need to get it too quickly. And he does really carry more. I think people tried to act surprised this year about the general arm strength, but the ball jumps out of his hand, and you know, he's going to drive the football downfield vertically as well as anybody in the NFL, in my opinion. I mean, he's right there with Mahomes. Mahomes is obviously a savant, but I think he's like, if Mahomes has the arm strength of, you know, 1A, I think Makers he's 1B, and he's not entirely that far behind, in my opinion.
Yeah. So you note in your article that, and this should not be surprising, but Nick Chubb ran into a ton of eight-man boxes, almost at a 30% clip, which is, I think that was like the most of any running back over a certain threshold of carries. I went and checked on next-gen stats. And, you know, in Tampa Bay, with their very mediocre runners, they basically didn't do that at all. Mm-hmm. So I guess a two-part question here is kind of how much of that was Hugh Jackson's doing and just the stuff that they had installed and his sort of lack of competence, and how much of that was, you know, just a lack of options. It's not a secret. The Browns don't have a ton of playmakers on offense, but so do you see the Monken influence just really leading them away from those plays and more importantly, giving Baker the freedom to check out of those plays when he sees it?
Yeah, great question. I think you feel really positive. One area about Freddie Kitchens I liked is, surprisingly, he was really good about mixing up first and second down pass percentages, which I think you have to be in the NFL, is really good about not being predictable in the first two downs of a series. So I like that. Tom Monken was obviously super, I would say, hyper-aggressive on first and second down, which is good as well. But the good part of being hyper-aggressive is that you can spread people out and run into, like you said, avoid eight-man boxes. The Rams are sort of king of this principle where you stay away from running into loaded boxes. And Todd Gurley, I think, ran into the least amount in the NFL this year, right? It was pretty fascinating how often they would do three wide receiver sets and find success running the football. So what I'm hoping is Todd Monken is able to rub off on Freddie Kitchens is the importance of, even if you're using a tight end, such as David Njoku, like they like to do, they really are a heavy 11 personnel team, the Browns. But they'll also do a lot of multiple tight end sets. Is drafting a tight end who can also sort of hybrid at wide receiver like a Mark Andrews did for Baltimore, but somebody that they can continue to spread out people, keep people out of the box, and have a positive influence. So Hugh Jackson didn't want to play Nick Chubb. I think Nick Chubb only had like 12 carries in Hugh Jackson's 10, something stupid. It was really low. And then they traded away Carlos Hyde because they just flat out, between Haley and Hugh, wouldn't play Nick Chubb. And after that, I think that those two calling plays, I just thought that between – Todd Haley's really calling the offense, but between Haley and Hugh, they just weren't doing Chubb any favors. I thought Freddie did okay at it as the year wore on, but I do think that's the big area Monken can help them improve, is the ability to find numbers advantages, because I think as an offensive coordinator, if your first time calling plays, you can be a little bit overwhelmed on finding those numbers advantages when you're trying to think ahead of what play to call and getting used to using the radio and calling it. All of those first-time play caller things might add up. So having two really sharp minds, if Freddie says to Todd, hey, man, we're going to run the ball here, what do you like? That sort of thing can be really beneficial.
So how much of like audibling and checking out of stuff was Baker allowed to do as a rookie? I would assume, you know, kind of hardly none.
At the beginning of the year, it didn't feel like anything. And that's probably to be expected because he's obviously a rookie in his first year in a system. But as the year wore on, and I think he became more comfortable under Kitchens, we saw more of that. I wrote an article, and I think people across the NFL were pretty heavily focused on a play he made in Denver where he was able to check them out of a play on the goal line, check into a little slant flat combination play to put the play side safety in a bind and throw a touchdown. Something that he recognized how Denver plays on the goal line and was able to manipulate the defense pre-snap to post-snap, and it was pretty effective stuff. So we saw more of it, but, you know, are we going to see Phillip Rivers-esque pre-snap, you know, direction? Maybe, maybe not. He's going to be working with some new minds on offense, a couple different minds in Lindley and Monk, and we'll see. I would expect him to get more freedom. I would hope that they give him more two-play call sets where he can kill it at the line of scrimmage and run something else. But I was encouraged by his ability in the second half of the year that things sort of slowed down for him, and I thought Freddie did a nice job of getting him to understand him. And Baker made note of this several times in interviews. You know, what does Freddie do well for you? He said he gets my eyes in the right place all the time. And that's important for a quarterback. If your eyes aren't in the right place pre-snap and then post-snap, you're going to have trouble. You're going to be a beat behind, and that's when rookies struggle. And I think that speaks volumes to what Freddie was able to do with him. Pre-snap identifying, post-snap identifying movement. That's important.
Yeah, I mean, I think those things generally translate well for young quarterbacks. Something that my mind was really going to while reading the article is the sorts of things that Sean McVay was doing for Jared Goff. And you actually noted that when Baker had more than 2.5 seconds to throw, which mm-hmm. basically comes on a play action play, that he was super successful with that. Has either Monken or Kitchens really talked about the play action or their desire to implement that, you know, even more next season? I think in the article you say they finished 7th in percentage of play action passes mm-hmm. last season.
Yeah, so they were heavy play action, and they were heavy from under center. They would do – so the Browns struggle with tackle play. Both of their tackles under the first offensive coordinator really struggled, and it was probably a big reason Haley and Hugh were fired, is the offensive ineffectiveness to protect Mayfield. They did a significant amount of what I called it when I was coaching, just counteraction run game stuff. So they would take the backside guard, pull him to kick out the play side in, just like a counter scheme would be in the run game. But they would take that guard, which, if you know the Browns roster, their guards, Kevin Zeitler, Joel Bitonio, are very impressive, and they're probably their two best offensive linemen. So their idea was, we will sell counter scheme, which we run a lot because we like power blocking, which is an Eric Coryell staples. They tie it with power scheme, down blocking systems. And we're going to sell this as a big part of our passing game. So they would take Zeitler or they'd take Bitonio and they would pull them to sell as they were simultaneously selling the run action fake. And they then would have a guard on one of the better pass rushers, defensive ends. And that would help, you know, your tackles would be down blocking. After your running back came off of the play action fake, you had an extra guy there to block. Right. So it was working out well. They did a lot of it and they were really effective with it, allowing guys like Breshad Perriman, who came in the second half of the year, or Antonio Callaway, the two guys who I called lid lifters on the Browns wide receiver group, to run downfield and make plays. And then it also allowed for Jarvis Landry to do a little bit of stuff with route game, you know, double moves, things like that, that take a little bit more time. So I thought they're effective. In the second half of the year, David Njoku was pretty effective too in play action stuff. He was making more plays down the field than he's ever made in his career, just 2 years into it nonetheless. But yeah, I would expect play action to continue to be a big part of things. If you watch Monken in Tampa Bay, they, even though they were terrible at running the football for the most part, in this is my philosophy, which I share with a lot of people and have had a lot of discourse with. You don't have to run the ball well to effectively run play action. That's not a thing. Like, people confuse the correlation there. That's not true. Linebackers, DBs, they're taught to read keys. If they get a run key, they're going to, for a split second, read run. That's how it works. And all you need in play action game is to get somebody to bite one step the wrong direction, and you can have success in the play action game. So if you can protect it well, there's no direct correlation to being able to run the ball well to set up play action. Just run play action. Run it well. All 11 guys block it well. It's going to be a big part of what the Browns do, I think, through Kitchens and through Monken.
Yeah, and I think that, I'm very excited to see it kind of along these same lines. Say you were put on Cliff Kingsbury's staff as an offensive quality control assistant. What mm-hmm. sorts of things would you take from, you know, what Kitchens has done with Baker, what Monken was doing in Tampa Bay to help Josh Rosen with that awful offensive line?
Yeah, I would take as much as I can getting the ball out of his hands quickly. That's kind of a layman's answer, but screen game, rhythm throws, identifying when you think teams are going to be playing man principles or going to be playing zone, and having easy checks to get throws out quickly. Second thing you can do, max protection play action. The Browns did a significant amount of it in the second half of the year, what I was just explaining. Sometimes the Browns would run that counteraction stuff out of 12 personnel, and they would have 7 guys in blocking, protecting the quarterback. If you cut back and watch the Carolina game the Browns played, the opening play for the Browns offense, after Carolina scored on their opening drive, the Browns play action and had 7 guys blocking. Actually, they ended up with 8 guys blocking 4 and threw the Perriman deep post. It's just going to make your quarterback feel more comfortable. And if you can still get a one-on-one somewhere with an explosive player like a Christian Kirk, right, you're gonna be able to find him downfield somewhere. So I'm a big fan of using as much play action to establish protection and then give your wide receivers more time. The more time you give receivers to get open, they're going to find a way to get open. Those guys are explosive. Lastly is Kitchens did a really good job of using his backs and tight ends to chip to help tackle play. Tackle play was a problem for the Browns. I think across Arizona's front, it was kind of everywhere, but they used as many backs and tight ends as possible to chip and then release into a route. And I thought that did a nice job of changing the rush course of opposing defensive ends. and sometimes allowed them to get double teams at the point of attack on the interior, which helped them handle tougher interior rushers. So those things are pretty universally known. I'm not breaking the ground on anything there, but that's all Freddie did. He added more of those upfront schemes in terms of the counter action stuff to help the O-line. They added more blockers into certain situations. They wanted to drive the football downfield to give their quarterback more time to throw. And then they helped as many times as they could with those backs and tight ends as well.
Yeah. All things that, you know, are pretty useful for young quarterbacks, kind of along those lines. So, I mean, a big topic right now, at least amongst us on football Twitter, is kind of just what to make of these rookie quarterbacks. I think everyone agrees Baker is the best, has the brightest future, you know, maybe an MVP someday, all pro seasons. But I actually kind of think all the rest of the rookie quarterbacks are pretty much Rorschach tests for how you view football. Like, people like me that are a little bit more unconventional, like I stopped playing football when I was 13. I've really approached the game a lot from data analysis and trying to see things a different way. Like, I think Lamar Jackson has this crazy ceiling because he already offers you something that's so clearly a plus, in that he's just this phenomenal runner, and he actually set the record for most quarterback carries in a season, only starting 8 games, and didn't leave any of those games hurt. I think that's a huge ceiling, whereas other people see that game against the Chargers and they're like, well, this guy, it'll clearly just never work. They'll never win a playoff game with this guy. Whereas other people go the opposite way with Josh Allen and they say, you know, he's such an electric runner and he has the cannon. If he learns accuracy, he's going to be amazing. So how do you see these four quarterbacks? You know, did anything they put on the tape their rookie year really change your mind about where you had them ranked pre-draft?
Another good question. There's so much nuance. I thought Sam struggled at the beginning of the year. Just felt like as a 21-year-old, the game was moving a little too quick for him. And then in the second half of the year, Bates sort of slowed things down in terms of adding a little bit more quick stuff, adding some more timing stuff that he was accustomed to from USC, and putting him in less weird positions with his body. I think Sam can be really good. Now, Adam Gase is very interesting. I don't know. I think.
Yeah, I'm very non-optimistic about that. Yeah. About that quarterback head coach pairing. I thought that was about as bad as it could get for Darnold with how young he is.
I'm with you, and I ironically wanted them to hire Monken for Sam.
But, yeah, so that's what I wanted. I really wanted Monken.
Yeah, they ended up hiring today, I think, Dow Loggins as the as the OC. Hey, more power to him. I just don't see it functioning all too well, in you know. Sam is good. He was the second highest guy I had coming out. He's got a lot of arm talent. He can do a really good job throwing off base, which you have to be able to do in the NFL, is doing so with accuracy. He can drive tight window throws. It's just a matter of finding a system that he's comfortable in, and I'm not sure that that lies with Adam Gase, but I'm optimistic enough still. It's very early in his career. Josh Allen surprised, I think, a lot of people second half of the year. Still not a gifted thrower. I think sometimes where Lamar Jackson ran due to structure, I thought Josh Allen ran due to, I don't know what the heck's going on in front of me. I'm just going to take off because I have natural athletic ability that I can win with. And that's okay. Like, that's fine. He did make some nice strides in the second half of the year as a passer. I thought the old Browns offensive coordinator who's there after his Alabama days, Brian Daboll, did a nice job with him. I think that they included a few more of those air raid principles the second half of the year. I talk a lot with some guys over at Buffalo, and I'm interested in their take on it. And they did a lot more timing stuff for him in the second half of the year, and he was a little bit more successful. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a very gifted thrower of the football. He's just raw. You either have that touch you need or you don't, and I'm just not sure he's ever going to consistently be a 4,000-yard passer. I don't ever see that from him consistently, unless he just totally flips a switch. But he's fine. You can win games with Josh Allen. I think they're going to win some games with him, and I think he's going to be in the league for a long time. I'm just not sure he's ever going to be, like we're talking about with Mayfield, a perennial all-pro year in and year out. I just think he carries a lot of run game risk. I think he puts his body on the line a lot. As far as Rosen goes, I need to see him with – I think he's obviously got a really sharp offensive mind in Cliff Kingsbury. I need to see how that all meshes. Hopefully Kingsbury can do more for him to get the ball out of his hands and keep him out of being a sitting duck. Because I think if you're, you know, what Mayfield did really well this year is his ability to escape and throw on the run and throw out of structure was much better than I thought. I knew he was very good outside of the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield against pressure. But I think in the NFL, you have to do a really, you have to be able to, like Darnold is able to as well, get out of the pocket to throw, step up, slide out because of upfield pressure, or evade some sort of interior threat, get away from them, throw on the run. Like Mayfield's ability and accuracy on the run was dynamic this year. His ability to face pass rushers in his face and be able to still find somebody downfield was even better than I thought it was. And I was obviously very high on him. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's what I need to see from Rosen. He's very heavy footed. He's good at maneuvering in the pocket, but is he able to get out of the pocket and throw on the run like you need to these days, like the Russell Wilson?
No, he really struggled at that. And that's why him with a bad offensive line was just a recipe for like this horrible offense. Like he was, because he doesn't have that skill set. And that, like, I actually liked Rosen more than Darnold as just like a thrower. But after watching them play their rookie years, I'm like much more in on Darnold now. And I would be long-term optimistic about Darnold if I thought this was a good head coach offensive coordinator situation. But I think, unfortunately, Darnold is going to be in this spot where he had a, you know, a rough rookie year with some bright spots towards the end. And he's going to get a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, and then I think these guys are going to get fired in a year. And so he's going to have three head coach coordinator combos in 3 years. And I know he's really young, but I think that that's, I think that just might end up being really bad for him.
Yeah, especially, I mean, he's still 21 years old. And yeah, I'm with you. That's why I think a big part of the Browns' decision was keeping the status quo with, you know, when you find that success the way they were in the second half of the year with the second best offense in the NFL, you just, you can't run from it. You need that, that continuity means something. And that's why I'm with you with Sam. That's a big part of what makes me nervous. The physical traits are there. Everything you need in the modern NFL is there for him. It's just a matter of him being able to find the system and the continuity within that system. But yeah, as far as Rosen goes, you got to protect him, because much like I have concerns about Dwayne Haskins' ability this year in the draft to get out and make throws on the run when you need to, he's not in any way effective at doing that. At least he hasn't proven so in his 1 year starting. That's where I have fears with Rosen. And Lamar, yeah, Lamar is gifted. He's as gifted as you're probably ever going to see. I think he proved that he could throw the football down the middle of the field at Louisville. I still have major concerns about his ability to throw the football accurately outside the hashes, which are some of the more challenging throws in the league. So if he can build on that ability and they trust him a little bit more to do that, like they did late in that Chargers game, I think that they can have something, because he can create. Like the legs that they're using so often with him, he can do that anytime. Like he can take off. He's done it multiple times in those 8 games where he would set back and drop and then take off. Like let him create. Like I think if you put what he's doing, Lamar's ability, and what Josh Allen was being asked to do, I think you could have something really dynamic. So I hope that Baltimore doesn't just 2 feet in and commit overly to this, you know, run heavy pistol set stuff, because I think that they can make it work traditionally with some tweaking and, you know, implementing some of those schemes here and there, allowing him to throw the ball more naturally. And kind of the way I hope – the reason I'm optimistic about it, or, well, I'm not optimistic because it's the Ravens and I'm a Browns fan, is that eventually San Francisco got there with Colin Kaepernick. Like, I think that they'll slowly start trusting him more, giving him more opportunity, and I think he'll flourish. So, you know, obviously I'm high on Mayfield because the tape tells you so. It's just hard to ignore. But, you know, all four of the other guys can be something, but it's – so much is about the factors going on around them that mean so much. I would probably put Sam as still my second guy and then have Lamar right there with him in terms of you really just trust Lamar's structure a lot more. And then I'm worried about Josh because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury can be a volatile situation there and you just don't know. And Josh Allen is probably 4 and then Rosen's 5. But I think Josh Allen can still do some things. They got, you know, Sean McDermott's a heck of a coach in Buffalo and they got a good structure in place if they keep building with him. But I just think there's a limit to what he can be as a thrower.
Yeah, I have Rosen over Allen just because I do think – and I liked the Cliff hire. Like, I liked it a lot better hiring him, hiring a guy from, like, an air raid offensive system than hiring, you know, whoever – toss out whatever retread coach you want, you know, a Schottenheimer or a Gase or whoever. Like, I would rather hire an untested offensive sort of guy than hire, you know, just someone who's already lost and been bad in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think that the retread stuff is one of the worst parts of coaching, and that's why I'm glad the Browns went outside the box too, in terms of don't look at the McCarthys of the world so much as trying to figure out what is a formula that can work for you and your franchise.
So overall, are you feeling pretty optimistic about the Monken-Kitchens pairing in Cleveland? Do you think, you know, the playoffs, Baker Mayfield running around in the first round against, you know, the Colts on the road or whatever? Is this something we're going to see?
It's got to be the expectation. I mean, you have a quarterback who broke records as a rookie and has proven to be ahead of his time. The game will only slow down for him the more he's exposed to it. So the expectation has to be playoffs. The expectation with this much money in free agency and this much draft capital still there on top of a young roster that has started to sort of gel and flourish together the second half of the year, there's always with the Browns a bit of Murphy's Law in terms of whatever can go wrong sometimes finds its way to go wrong in Cleveland. But I think with this quarterback and this head coach, you feel like they're not going to let that happen. So the expectation should be playoffs, win the division, make the playoffs, and make a push. I mean, like, the gold standard is what Philly was able to do in year two of Wentz on a rookie deal, and the gold standard is what LA has done now in year three for Jared Goff on a rookie deal. The Browns' window is we have 3 years of elite quarterback play, we think, and it's cheap. So we can surround him with weapons. We can surround the defense with as much talent as we possibly can before we have to re-sign Miles. We have to re-sign Baker. We have to re-sign so many other young players, Demarius Randle, Denzel, all of those guys that are young. You got to find a way in this window to be really, really competitive. And I think that the pressure is there to do it. And that should be the expectation, is finding a way into the playoffs and possibly hosting a playoff game next year.
All right. So before we transition over, Jake and I are going to go over to the Patreon part of the podcast and talk a little bit, specifically some Browns roster construction stuff, if you guys are liking this episode. But before we go over and do that, why don't you tell the people where to find you and engage with your work?
Yeah, of course. So you mentioned earlier my personal Twitter, which is @Jake_Burns18. Then I have the other Twitter account, which is @BrownsFilmBDN, which is short for Browns Film Breakdown. So just BrownsFilmBDN if you're ever interested in following film content. We have the YouTube channel, which is just Browns Film Breakdown, that breaks off of that. And then I write at the OBR, which is the Orange and Brown Report. And then I write weekly X and O stuff for Cleveland.com, which is, you know, free for everybody to view up at Cleveland.com. So yeah, those are the best ways I stay up on content. Quite a few different things, really, when I say it out loud.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Go ahead and make sure and check all those things out. And we are going to go over and head behind the paywall now.